Well, our second patient had a long family history of diverticulosis. Chris was immediately put on antibiotics following a severe diverticulitis attack, but eventually needed laparoscopic surgery to remove part of his colon. We visited Chris and his wife in Kent Island, Maryland, to talk about what he went through and his recovery.
Being on a boat is a getaway. It's a close, nearby vacation. The minute you cast off, you kind of forget about what's happening in your house, at work. My wife, my son, and my parents, and my brother were down in Mexico, Cabo San Lucas, and myself, my father, and my brother rented a boat, and we caught ourselves a marlin. We spent the weekend with some friends, where we had a bunch of appetizers on a boat. A couple days after, I started having a little bit of stomach tightness, which I thought was just typical constipation, or you ate something that just didn't agree with you. And about 12 hours later, I was on the floor of my office. I couldn't move. I was in so much pain. My wife had to pick me up and bring me to the doctor.
I was scared. I didn't know really what was going to happen. I didn't think surgery was going to be something we were going to have to do.
They immediately put me on pain medicine and ordered some CAT scans. About 12 hours after the scan, my doctor called me and told me to immediately stop eating. I stopped taking pain medicine, that I had diverticulitis. So I was having an attack. I had just turned 38. Right. And right there, that's when it kind of hit home. So they put me on antibiotics immediately, gave me some simple orders, nothing but liquid diet. So I followed that for about a day and a half. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. I woke up just vomiting violently. And the doctor told me to go to ER immediately. They kept me in the hospital for about 4 days on antibiotics to try to get the infection under control.
It wasn't working, and he was still continuing to suffer. And that's when I started to get worried. And then after that, they had scheduled a colonoscopy for him, and they couldn't even do it because the infection was so bad. So after that point is when I started saying, we need to find out what his options are.
I tried to research success rates for people diagnosed with the attack who continued to be on medication and how long it was until they had a second attack. There was real no definite answer. First time I heard surgery was an option was about 2.5 months after I was hospitalized from the attack, the conventional way, where they remove the section and they install a colostomy bag. With the colostomy bag, you're talking 8 months having to deal with that.
Once we had found out that it could be done laparoscopically, that helped make the decision even easier. So I said, you know what, if we find the right doctor and we trust him and it can be done very simply, let's just go get it done.
I think anyone's scared of surgery in general. It's not something that's normal. I mean, you're talking about, you know, human hands going inside, removing a part of your body, and then ultimately trying to put you back together. And there's no 100% guarantee that everything's going to be okay.
But I think I was more calm than Chris was. My concern was that they were going to get enough of the disease portion out so that he could recover and be fine again. And they did.
I was discharged from the hospital the day before Thanksgiving, 2008. That night, I had a meal at a very good Mexican restaurant in Annapolis.
Thank you.
And I was able to enjoy a half-sized turkey dinner for Thanksgiving.
Nice. That's awesome.
The doctor said that when we came home from the hospital, you know, he had to make a lifestyle change. He had to cut out the junk food, the fast food, the processed food.
What we've done was we went to high fiber items, a lot of fruit, a lot of vegetables, a lot of the breads we eat now, we make sure that it has at least 5 grams dietary fiber.
Okay.
I look at the future with a lot brighter and more positive attitude, because again, I didn't know what the outcome was going to be. It could have been a lot worse than how it turned out. I'm very thankful that I'm able to enjoy the things I can enjoy today.
Chris really represents a smaller percentage of the population, but an important population to recognize with diverticulitis. He has what sounds like a very complex attack. He really smoldered for a period of time. And so typically these patients would come to surgery electively once you can get the disease to quiet down and allow the inflammation to defervesce. Historically, we had always recommended surgery routinely for patients under the age of 50. That's changed a bit, and it really has much more to do with the acute presentation rather than age specifically. Clearly, again, he benefited from the laparoscopic approach.
I think his case was managed very nicely. Often what we'll see in our clinics are patients who've had standing orders for antibiotics and pain medication for subsequent attacks. And I think there's some danger in this because it's going to mask their symptoms and potentially their disease process is smoldering and getting worse as time goes on. And then all these real risks of fistula formation, as Doug was saying, or colostomy, as Chris was saying in the video, become more significant. So that is one thing that we can definitely be concerned about is when these patients come in to see me, they'll tell me they've had 10 episodes in the last several months, but they've been treating themselves with antibiotics and pain medications.
We've discussed minimally invasive surgery as an option for patients with non-malignant disease, and that's clear that many of those patients can benefit from shorter hospital stays and faster recovery times. Is laparoscopic surgery used in colorectal cancer?
Well, yes, it is, and my surgical colleagues can attest to it. But it's a great option not only for colorectal cancer, where it's been shown to be as effective as the traditional open operations, but it's also used in some cases of polyps that are difficult to manage endoscopically. You know, our preference would be with colorectal polyps to remove them during colonoscopy because it costs less and it's an outpatient procedure. But there are a set of polyps that we can't remove, either because of their size. Sessile polyps, they have a very broad attachment to the colon wall. They pass over a couple of haustral folds. They may be very difficult to access during colonoscopy. They might cover the opening to the appendix, which would make them impossible to remove or be invading, you know, sort of growing into the ileum. And so there's a group of polyps that actually constitute one of the major indications for laparoscopic surgery for neoplasia, that is either cancer or polyps. So it's emerging as a really important role in the management of neoplasia in the colon.
I think our society, the Colorectal Society, has worked very hard as a group of surgeons to try to make sure that the operation that we do for cancer is the exact same operation we do open, so that the patient is we're removing all of the cancer out of the patient, whether we do it minimally invasive or whether we do the procedure open. And so there was a large trial that looked at the comparison between laparoscopic and open procedures, and we found that there was no difference and no disadvantage to doing something minimally invasive, so that we could get all the benefits of reducing the scar, reducing the length of stay, and reducing pain, and still cure them of their cancer.
I think it's important, again, to stress the fact of what is minimal in minimally invasive surgery. It's not the scope of the operation. It's not the ability to carry out an oncologically appropriate surgical resection. It's the physiologic stress that is minimized for the patient. And when you look at comparisons, there's some very compelling data to suggest that actually survival may be better in certain sections of patients that have a laparoscopic approach versus open.